off last week in the middle of Tosfos. Again, I told you not to worry about it, but you might find it a little bit disturbing. Where Tosfos, we saw Gemara and Shabbos, where the Gemara has a different text, it seems, in its medkin, its drash, then we have an hour Sfarim. Tosfos says the language of Tosfos, Hashash Shalom, Kolek Al-Sfarim Shalom. We saw last week already is that our Sifrei Tanakh are really the Sfarim of the Bali Masora of the 8th, 9th, and 10th century in Tveria. And that's where our system, our signs of localization, our signs of trust, and various other things like that come from. What was being transmitted between the time of Chazal and the time that Bali Masora wrote their text down? So there, we know that the continental text, the letters, were being transmitted. If the tradition was already to write certain letters, big or small, that was there already. There clearly was a tradition of, obviously they pronounced the words, but there certainly was a tradition of pasuk phrase. How do we know that? It depends what your take on them are. Is that what you're referring to? Right, the question is what the Gemara said, what the word Pitzkei Tamen means. That may be trust. It may not be necessarily pasuk phrase, but we know. Daniel? David?
So
the Gemara Kedushin talks about how many Sukkim there are in Tilim, how many Sukkim there are in Tumish, how many Sukkim there are in Yemen. And yet the Gemara acknowledges that there's a certain lack of clarity between how you divide up Sukkim. The Gemara says that in Eretz Yisrael, they used to divide the pasuk that we have as one into three parts, the pasuk and parsha Yisrael. So. So the question is what happened to the text that our Sifrei Tanakh between the time of Chazal and the time of the Bali Masora? And the answer is not a lot, but we know of cases, and we looked at the Gemara and Shabbos, and the Kivayger on the side lists a whole bunch of examples where the Gemaras or Midrashim have a different text than we have in our Sifrei Masora and our Sifrei Tanakh. Now, who was the first one to notice this problem? So I'm going to assume, and I assume that some people saw Professor Maury's article, some of those were here last week. And in Professor Maury's article, he basically follows the history through, and the truth is he is actually not the one, and he gives the credit in the footnotes for a lot of the material, goes to Professor Lyman, who teaches at Brooklyn College, and teaches here, Chair Lyman, who actually really is the one who did sort of a lot of the original work on this. Who was the first one to really write about this programmatically? So Rav Haigon already starts to address the question. But he, in a sense, takes he does what like Rashi does here a little bit, Rashi and Shabbos. Rashi and Shabbos sort of, I would say, covers up Rashi claims to his post in the Gemara, and that Rashi says we never heard of such an Amora. Now, if you look at our Gemara, it says you have the Gemara Shabbos open in front of you. Who would be Amora who says not Rashi did? It's on page 17 of the meter. Does anyone recognize this Amora's name? So who have read Yeshua? You should. Who was his buddy? Who was his Garclosa? The Papa, the very famous Machlokas and Shas that are Papa Rosas and Huda Brid and Yeshua, like Shibud the Raisa, whether you say that Shibud the Raisa or Priya Falkov Mitzvah, as you might have learned that earlier. Many, many cases. Rahuna, Brid, Yeshua, and Papa. Rashi obviously had a different year than the Gemara. Funny that should be. Because he says we don't recognize the name of the Samora. I think the Marshal points this out, that Rashi obviously had some other name. And therefore he assumed that this entire piece was a topic. Tosfos didn't assume that way. But even if one were to assume in certain cases that it's simply a mistake, not just a printer's error, but actually a piece that doesn't belong there, there are enough cases that Tosfos' point remains relevant, that there are going to be differences between the Sfarim that Chazal had and what we have in our Sifrei Masora. I recall when I was, I think, probably 14 years old, learning Rashi and Rabbi Mitzvah Parsha Truma. And I saw there the eighth Kalashara Saber Tobin Israel, and Rashi writes above Yaseva, and he quotes two other examples. And I remember looking in the text of the Chumash, and there was no Vav. I'm sort of left there scratching my head, and I had no idea what to do with them. I just moved on. It never occurred to me then. It never occurred to me the possibility that Rashi, Sefer Torah, had above there. Now, if you look at the Dimur Maskel, it's there. In fact, really, even though it's Archwell, according to Archwell, you often can explain things, oh, this isn't in Rashi, it doesn't have something out of Rashi. There are some cases you can explain away and say that it's really not a different text, but this is a case where everybody acknowledges Rashi has something different to Sefer Torah than we do. So the question that the Rishonim had to grapple with is, so, explain that. Does it matter? Why does it matter? Why does it matter when the Chazal had a cluster or mole and we have a mole or cluster? It's not earth-shaking. I mean, you think? You saw?
Well, based on the Drushos, if the Drushos is on a something that a variant text is a degree of variance, then it gives insight into the value of the Drush itself.
Okay, that's interesting. That answer is a very important comment you're making, but that is predicated upon assumption that in many cases that the drasha precedes the din. That's a very complicated question. When is the drasha nasmasta? I mean, the din is known and there is probably a particular din, and when is it really the source? But let's assume for the moment that you're correct, that there are, and I can certainly are cases where the drasha is the source. So, you're making a very radical suggestion that maybe you should make a difference in the halakha. I would argue, this is a very interesting question that arises in general. Supposing we were to find Sefer Torah, written by Moshe Rabbeinu, with Yeshua Ben Nun signature on the bottom, affirming that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Sefer, and Sabiyah the Yosef Ben Machamacher, so we could verify his signature. And let's say certain words differed, however it was from our Sefer Torah. Let me assume you have, like we have here between the Gemara and our Sefer Torah. Would it matter? I don't know the answer to that question. Different people would give you different answers. I suspect the Chazon Ish would probably tell you it doesn't matter, and we would ignore what you found. There are other people I know who probably say, I'm guessing, I don't know for sure, Rashi would probably say, yeah, you have to change the Sefer Torah, and that's what they would look at. I don't know for sure, but given his comments he's made in the latest thing, I suspect that that's what he would hold. And the answer is, it's not going to happen, don't worry. I actually would be very happy if it happened, if we found the Sefer Torah, but bottom line, it's not happening. But theoretically, and the question really comes up here, Aaron?
The Rashba says, in the article that you made us read, that follow, like, the version
that
the
Drush. Okay. So the first lengthy treatment of it, and there's enormous historical ironies in this, was by the Rashba in the Tshuva. I think you all know, heard of the Rashba, I think that was a given, but just be aware of who the Rashba was. The Rashba is probably, maybe after the Rambam, maybe before the Rambam, maybe the most influential Rishonim in Pesach Halacha, maybe the most influential Rishonim in Pesach Halacha, maybe even more than the Rambam. Our Sheikh of Yerodea, the organization of Yerodea is based upon the Rashba's source of Eid, so the Torah wrote based upon. The Rashba has a good model that he has so many Tshuvos quoted in the Beit Yosef. It's very, very influential. It's obviously the Gilder, one of the Gilder Rishonim in Spain, certainly in his Zohar. The Rashba was in Barcelona, I think. And he plays a very, very formative influence on Pesach and Shulchan Aruch. Some of you, do you know what is the Mechaber's rule for Pesach? Some of you probably know. What's his rule? Right. So it's stacked against Ashkenazim, but he says Rambam Rish Rush. But the reality is, when you actually look at the Mechaber's Pesach Halacha, the Rashba, he doesn't mention that list, plays a very disproportionate role. So the Rashba has a truth about it. Now, if anybody actually went and read the Shuvah of the Rashba, and I'll take the blame because I didn't actually put it that Shuvah specifically, and I didn't give you the source, you would actually discover that the Rashba's Shuvah is very difficult to read. The Shuvah got corrupted, which is a great irony. That's the irony in all this. As opposed to the Rashba. The Rashba is quoted by the Mincha Shai. The Mincha Shai, who is the Mincha Shai? Anyone know who Mincha Shai is? Even if you don't know who he was biographically, who? Anyone heard of it? Say from Mincha Shai? What is the Mincha Shai?
Yeah?
Oh, you heard of it? Yeah. So the Mincha Shai was an Italian rabbi, I think 17th century, the Salonorzi, who had, and it's printed in the back of the net there, of the Vienna prison that I showed you last week, that's now put out, I know the net there puts it out. Back in each plumage is the Mincha Shai, where he collects comments about grammatical issues that relate primarily to pronunciation or spelling of words. It's sort of like, you know, a handbook to tell you how where to spend money. And he quotes, so you have different terms, some for me this way, some for me that way. And he quotes lots and lots of the early Rishonim who were sort of masteries. Not masteries in the classic sense, but who really dealt with these issues, like the Yad-Ramah, Ibn Ezra, Radak. So he quotes them and other early authorities who spoke about what they had in their great Torah, to know what really is supposed to be written about. The Mitzvashai there quotes the Tshuva the Rashba as saying that if there's a difference between what Chazal had based upon the Gemara Medrash, and what we have in our Sifrei Masorah, you follow me, we preserve our Sifrei Masorah, and we ignore what Chazal had said. Hold on. What happened here? The Tshuva of the Rashba itself actually was corrupted. It's not what the Rashba said. Now you'll ask me if our put the Tshuva of the Rashba had it. The Min Hashai quotes the Rashba as saying this. And what Lyman points out is that later in Kesef HaSofer by Rav Gunstein in the 19th century, which is now the Sofer of Daniel, that's sort of their sacred spot, he quotes this Min Hashai, quotes this fact that Tshuva to Rashba and saying that you don't change our part. Now, how do I know that the Rashba says something different? Because the Me'iri quotes the Rashba. Firstly, if you read the Rashba's Tshuva carefully, it doesn't make sense. It's something you can tell, something doesn't flow naturally. And then when you look at the Me'iri has a work on top, so you know what it's called? Then you have the 14 volume Me'iri, you look at the margins, you'll see there are several works that are not on top, that are not on a regular set, but there are other things. Some are Mishnayot, and Perishon Avos, and Perishon Tavos. And then Me'iri has a sefer called Kiryat Sefer. It's one of the Me'iri's drawings. And the Me'iri there cites the Rashba differently in a way that actually makes sense. If you go back and look at our version of the Tshuva to Rashba, you begin to see what happened to the Tshuva. There, what the Me'iri says, what it quotes the Rashba is saying is as follows. When the drasha is on a halachic realm, and the Yisrael just goes back to the issue you raised, then you have to change our svarim to match that of the Gemara. You change our Sifrei Torah, you go into Yeshua's Aron Kodesh, you pull out the Torah, you change it. If it's an agada, then you don't. Now, why should it matter? Because what Yisrael said before could have been one answer to the theory, but aside from that possibility, yes. Your name again? No. What I'm saying is that Rashba says you change the sacred Torah. I agree with you. The notion that we observe the halacha either way, fine. That's what I just said in response to 12 comments earlier. But accepting that, forgetting we're not talking about what you do halacha might in terms of the halacha that's fine. That's a given. We follow the halacha. The question is, what do you do for the writing of the sacred Torah? Do you leave it as our Ramban and Torah have it? And clearly Chazal that had a different nusach, had a malay or had a chaser, or do you change it to match that which the Gemara or the Medrash suggests is really there? That's the only question. The question that is not what halacha is. Halacha is what the Gemara says, halacha is what the Rishonim says, halacha is what the Shofar says, halacha. That's not the question. The question is, what do you do to the writing of the sacred Torah? So why should they do it? I think that is correct. Agada, Chazal probably took greater liberties with Agada. And therefore, when you see a Drush and Agada, for example, how many wives did Avraham marry in his lifetime?
Two, three.
What were their names? What's your name, Joseph?
Hi. Agar.
Okay.
And
the last one is Keturah. Okay. Now, what does the manager say? Rashi quotes it. And Keturah was Agar. Now, there's only one problem with that. It says it was Nay. Well, what is Rashi quote from the Medrash responding to that? Pilach Shim is written Chaser Yud. The teacher that we're the only one to write. Okay, so very nice. Only one problem. Open up your Sefer Torah, and it's not. So, could it be that Chazal were taking license? Yeah, that's what the Rashba would probably say. I don't think he spells it out, but that's what probably he was saying. That Yidrash Agada And we're going to talk about Haggadah in the second half of the course. Particularly Kafkei Sfar's view on Haggadah in general was markedly different than popular views on Haggadah today. Chachmei Ashkenaz, I'm not so sure. But the Rashba assumes that the Haggadah does not have to be taken, at least in terms of its derivation. It could have been based upon, it didn't have to be so seriously connected. They might have taken liberties with the text. And it's Rashba on Haggadah, they wouldn't have done with Halacha. Yes. Someone answer that question? Say it again. It's a fair question. There's an answer to it. But go ahead. Say it again.
According to this opinion, it would seem that when Allah got it, they have a question on God's life, and then they'll call it an explanation, even if it stretches their imagination. But why would they go out of their way to make an God based on and change the public just to make an God that would stretch their imagination?
And the answer is, look at Haggadah, that's what they do. They change the stuff. They change letters and say, read it this way, don't read it that way. They do it all.
No, but that's different forms of something else that they might have. Another question they might have.
Let me tell you something. I don't know if Chachmei Ashkenaz will help this way, but the standard, and this is a nice way of putting it, the standard view of Chachmei Sfar, like the Rambam, you see it more in the summer, Rambam and Rambam, is the only, their view on Haggadah is as follows. So the story is as follows. There was a great Hasidic Maggid, and someone went up and said to him, how come it is that for every, you have all these wonderful stories to tell? You always have an appropriate story. A wonderful story. So the Maggid said to him, let me tell you a story. So one time, I approached an archer, okay? And I saw a king, he finished shooting his arrow. And there was his target, and all the arrows were right in the middle. Here's my only person. And he said, how can you know how to shoot so perfectly? And the archer responded, because first I shoot the arrow, and then I draw the target. The answer to your question is, in a case like this, at least, again, you may be right. You don't have to accept, one could argue that maybe you don't think the Rashba, maybe you think Chazal didn't really have a text, and maybe the Rashba, or maybe that's for a different reason. Maybe it's a different reason for distinction. But what one could, the reason why Chazal might have taken more liberty from Haggadah is that the essential point was the message of the Haggadah, whatever they're trying to do, whatever they're trying to teach you, and having it do it is the secondary. So they like to do it hanging in upon a text. Now, I'm being a little disingenuous here because one of the things you can also hear from me about Haggadah Chazal on the whole, I don't want to say every Haggadah, I don't want to say every collection of Haggadah, is that the answer of Chazal may not be pshat, and there to teach a lesson, but almost always with response to a problem in the text. Okay? More on that in the second half of the course. So your question's a good question. I think that's the answer, but we'll deal more on that. Aaron?
They would have, in your analogy, they would have drawn the target differently. Like they would have drawn the target around the sukkim that they had.
No. See, what I would tell you is that Chazal, for whatever reason, did not want to see Avram as marrying another wife. I could give you a drush and explanation for why they didn't want to see Avram as having more wives, having a third wife. Maybe it's because they felt that one star was out of the picture, Avram as a Rahman, as a Golan, I thought they wanted to take it back on, whatever it is. And therefore, they thought it didn't strike them that Avram should have been marrying a third woman. And
So they could have come up with a different explanation of the text.
Okay.
If you put them in the baby drush, then it could be shot down right away. And then you make the judge.
But maybe times have changed. I don't know. Times have changed. I don't know what direction, but so I'm not telling you. Maybe the Rosh Hashanah has an explanation. Or maybe what I'm saying is the explanation for what the Rosh Hashanah says, but maybe you disagree. That's okay in terms of what you think Chazal really had in front of them. But one can see it much more readily. The consequences of Haggadah are not the consequences of Halach. If I give a message, I have an Haggadah that Avram did marry a third wife, that he did marry a third wife, it doesn't bring down practical ramifications. Okay, so I taught a lesson, whatever the lesson was. But if I talk about, we have four parshas and so on, three parshas and so on, it really matters what the Torah has about or doesn't have about.
So we're ignoring the, we're saying for halacha, we're saying that we're going to follow halacha like it's in the Shulchan Aruch.
I agree, but what I'm saying is that we might choose to do that. We are confronted with a problem, right? If the Rambam came alive today, and there was a certain halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that was based upon a reading of the Rambam said, wrong text. I didn't say that. I was close to go, what would we do? And the answer is probably, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The answer is probably we could go around. Not that that's not what he meant, because it doesn't matter. That may be the nature of Allah. So what we do, is a separate issue. But whether Akana or Namor would have made a drasha with ramifications for himself, which would have depended upon it, that I don't think he would have made as the real text in front of him.
Okay. Yes.
You were saying before that, especially with regards to the goddess, and a lot of the drushas are really a smock, but it's very possible they were created the other way around.
Yeah. I want to make one thing. When I say asmachta, I don't mean sometimes the Gemara says midrabanan ukra asmachta balmi. I don't mean asmachta in that sense, drabanan. I mean asmachta in the sense, the way the Rambam described in Perusha Mishnah, everybody knew that Kriyat Hadar was Nesra. That's one of the things we call Perushim and Kubalim. But you'll find three or four different derivations in the Gemara. How do you know it's Nesra? Those are asmachta for something that didn't arise. It's just how do you know the did? Or how do you know that Kriyat Hadar means? Or how do you know that Ayin Hafasayin means Mamam and not Mamish?
It wouldn't have to be straight out of the summary, it wouldn't have to be...
I mean, they're usually going to learn it from Sukkim, but what I say, those drushas may come after the halacha, not necessarily before the halacha. Okay. So anyway, fine. So that is the issue. So ironically, what the Rashba actually says, there are certain cases in which you do change our Sfarim, as opposed to continuing to follow the Sifrei Masorah. I suspect it's being very hard pressed to find today a Sofer who follows the original version of the Truth of Rashba. There are examples, I will tell you that Sofrim, what Lyman points out, this is not in Mori's article, Lyman's article, it's not on the syllabus. Lyman points out that if you go through the centuries, you'll find century after century, you go to every Shelter and Athonim, are screaming at this issue on how you're supposed to change the Sifrei Torah. Rashba was not alone in this. And yet, somehow it didn't happen. So Lyman raised the question, why? Why did the Sofrim not listen? So he speaks about the possibility that Sofrim sort of had their scribal, this was in medieval Europe, in the Christian Europe, there were scribal guilds, so there were also, the Sofrim operated a little bit in the same way, and therefore they still had their own authority. I will tell you today, both for good or bad, depends on, it may depend upon the situation and depending on your perspective, Sofrim today also are to some extent immune from some of the general trends in halacha. The general trend in halacha, you know, is being to try to give to all the shittos. Sofrim, on the whole, do not do that. If they did, we wouldn't have any kashrus to pray Torah Tulum and Mezuzah. It would be impossible. But they don't. They sort of have their own traditions and how they do things, and that's what they do. And it doesn't matter. You can be the Gadol Hadar and you tell them what they should do. You know, maybe the guy should pride himself and will write you tell them what you want. But the bottom line is, most Sofrim follow the tradition and stop. I'm not saying that they detach from halacha, but in other words, whatever shittos they follow, it's very hard to get them to change. Even in examples where that there are clear taliyos, modern taliyos, of the last couple of centuries. There are a couple of examples in the Megillah of Lifsehem and Vistahem, Alaro, Gilaro, something under Yitzhak Sukkim. That practice is really based upon the Talmud. What the Sifrei Masorah has is clear. Most of our Megillahs are written the wrong way. I've tried to get, at least for a student of mine, tried to get the Sofer to change it. It wouldn't do it. You know, I probably have to find, you know, one of the Sofer who comes from YU or something. And I don't mean that as a knock. I just meant that someone who's a little less than that. We have a few people come to here, Blaine Sofer, who might be willing to change it. But it's very hard to get Sofer to change, for better or for worse. Now, just one general comment. What implications does this have, this issue of changes in this term, the kashrus of the Sefer Torah? It's not really relevant, per se, of course, but I'm sure some of you are bothered by the question. The Gemara clearly indicates that we're not the key in Bechaseiros Yetzeiros. We're not experts in terms of Malay Hoser in many areas. That's why the Gemara said we couldn't count to figure out the Baba Gahon, whether it was the middle letter of the first half, the second half, which half it belonged to. Shabbos Aryeh writes, I think, that you said there is no mitzvah to see the Sefer Torah with Malay Zeh because of this issue. He assumes that if one letter, well, let me say if he said that, what is the din of the Sefer Torah Shachatra of Aha? It's really not Lotus that we show. The Rambam and the Ramban both assume that they are supposed to have to talk at the 12th. There is, however, a long run in Megillah. It's based upon a Gemara, I think the Gemara is in here. Sefer Torah Shachasra Yiriya Acha is a Tzula. The implication of the statement of Sefer Torah Shachasra Yiriya Acha is a Tzula is what? Yeah. Anything less than a Yiriya would be kosher. And if you look, if you want to put reference to the Tosfos in Megillah, I think that Yoram and Aleph, when the Gemara says if you write the Gorsa Hadusa, the Aramaic and Vayetze, if you write it in Hebrew, it's possible, the Tosfos says how can it be possible? After all, if you left it out of Kashuk, so what's so bad if you wrote it, so you wrote it wrong, so you wrote it in Hebrew, if you wrote Gal Eid instead of Yigarsa Hadusa, the Tosfos says it doesn't mean it's not as possible, you have to fix it. And if the Tosfos there, I think it's either Tosfos or Yoram and Aleph, in Megillah, Tosfos references you to the Gemara, I think you can get it. I think it's getting down. So the question is, so bottom line, Ramban gives a fetch parrot with the Ram quotes in Megillah. But the Ramban and the Rama both assume that the Chasa Osachas is Psula. The Baal HaTosfos assume not. The general stock is that we assume that a Sefer Torah Shachasa Osachas is Psula. But if it's only Sefer Torah, we make a Raha. Now, what about Chaseris and Yiseris, then? And that's if you know. That's if you know what the text is supposed to read, and you are still permitted to say. What if, you know, there are cases where there are Torah that disagree, early Sefer Torah. One way the Chashayim quoted, others Sefer Torah have the other way. So, obviously, you pick one or the other, but what are the consequences if it's wrong? So, Minchas Tinuch, and the truth is, this question already goes back to Rishonim. Something you learned in Gemara Sanhedrin, anybody here learned the first part of Sanhedrin? So, you know the Gemara there, the whole sugya about Yeshem and Mikra, Yeshem and Masoret. Whether you follow the Ksiv or the Kray in terms of how you darshan halakhically. And so the Gemara, for example, said that how do you know that you're supposed to have, there's a Mahodis Misham of Etilal, how many Matamas on the Mizdeah, on Ake or Karban Chata. So based upon the drasha, the word three times appears Karnos. But twice the Gemara says it appears Chaser, once it appears Mole, and that's a total of four. The Chaser one only counts as one Karen, the Mole one counts as two. That's four pointers, and then how do they get to their drasha? And the other kind of, since we meet them all as Mole, so it's six corners, and you get this, the Shammai, the Tola Shiva. The Rana, they already asked the question, and if you look at our Sefer Torah, you better have Tanakh, go look at your Tanakh. And you'll see that in all three parashas, the last two sections of Paradalis, three sections in Paradalis, Parashat Vayikra. So what you'll see there is that the word Karnos in our Sefer Torah, not Sefer Torah, and that the Ran had in his Sefer Torah, it's all Chaser. Just keep that in the tail of the back of your mind. Now, the Mitzvah Tzino, I believe in the Mitzvah Tzino Sefer Torah, is the last Mitzvah, Tav Reish Yud Gimel. The Mitzvah Tzino says that when a Chaser and Mole has no effect on the Halacha, the non-Halachic issue, it doesn't talk about Sefer Torah. And that's how we try to get around the problem. Of course, the real problem is that there are several drushes of Gemara, including Karnos, including Tokafot, which do have an impact upon the Halacha. Okay. That was what the Mitzvah Tzino, however, said. The Me'iri, and I don't think the Mitzvah Tzino was aware of it, because the Me'iri didn't exist in this day, the Me'iri and the Kiryat Sefer actually write that, no, he doesn't distinguish between Halacha and Agada. I'm just going to tell you, I'm not going to ask you this on the exam. Someone asked me in class, generally the exam is going to come from the Koros, and this is for your edification, particularly this last section, but it's usually very straightforward from the Koros in the reading, which we discussed. Anyway, so the Me'iri says that it depends upon whether or not there's a valid tradition among the Tzfarim to have it this way. Meaning, if you go and collect all the Sefer Torah you can find, and you find that there are 35 that read one way, and 20 read another way, so no matter which way your Sefer Torah reads, that's going to be acceptable. Meaning, Hatzilah, you should do it probably following the road, but it doesn't talk about Sefer Torah if there's a sort of a valid meaning. But if you look at your 35 Sefer Torah, and all of them read Malei Vav, and your Sefer Torah is up there, that possible to say the current has to and must be fixed. Yeah.
How would it become an issue if you use a computer scan? Let's say now that you want to compile all the Sefer Torah and decide what a tradition was. How would it, can you do it using a computer?
You have to ask a computer scientist that question. You know, I'm sure you remember I mentioned last week that computers do make mistakes. Computers never make mistakes. Programmers make mistakes. but the fact that the computers can't be designed, or at least end of probably 8-9 years ago, the software was not perfect enough to do a perfect job in the Sefer Torah. And we had a new Sefer Torah in the shul that, Danny, you were probably too young for this. We had a, did you remember this? I taught the Bar Mitzvah kid, and he got up and he read what he was supposed to read, which is what was in front of him, and it was wrong. And it had been human checked, and it had been computer checked. So, but I presume you could establish, the truth is, what you would do is, if your computers ran through it and they found 30 places where they found certain variants, you go back and check it by eye, and once you know what you're looking for, that you're not going to miss. But in terms of whether you can rely upon a computer, that's a statistical issue of growth. Okay, so anyway, so that's as far as, so now what we've done is, we've taken the transmission, we started last week by taking the transmission of the text, starting with our Sifrei Tanakh. By the way, I did have the scan of this. This is Rebroyer's earlier version put out by the Moshe Nora Cook. It's also printed in the Torah's Chaim. This is the first version. And then he moved on. I think he had some, I don't know what his machlokos were with the Moshe Nora Cook over certain issues, and so he moved on to celebrate in the next edition, and I showed you the from the Kateh Yerushalayim Tanakh. So we traced the history of our text of our Sifrei Tanakh from the modern day back to the Bava Mitzora, and now we've gone a little bit looking from the Bava Mitzora back to Chazal. For the most part, that's really where our journey ends. Why does our journey end there? I have some things to fill in between, but why does the journey end in the period of Chazal or a little bit earlier? This is no more documentation, right? One might extrapolate it, if the text changed, and I should say the changes are on scope very minor, between the time of Chazal and the time of the Bava Mitzora, a period of, let's say, 700, 800, 900 years or something like that. It's possible from the time that Yirmiyahu wrote to say, fair and told the time, you know, we had the first, when are our earliest Sfarim, by the way? What are the earliest? The Dead Sea Scrolls, right? Whose texts are problematic for reasons I'm not going to go into, but we don't really always know what those texts represent. But, bottom line, we have materials from the turn of the common era, even before Chazal, but those Svarim have to be used with great caution because while this is a little bit intellectually dishonest, there's a better explanation, a better answer, a better discussion. Let's just say that some would say, well, the reason why many of the Svarim and Qumran differ from those that Chazal have, that we have, is because they were put in shameless for a reason. Okay? So that's not exactly true, but bottom line is the Qumran scrolls give us a lot of important evidence for a lot of things, but they don't necessarily tell us what the text of the Purushim look like. Okay? I'll leave it at that for now.
Where were they from, the Qumran?
The Qumran, all the texts date from around 200 BCE to 70, and that's when Qumran was destroyed, or 67. There are a few more fragments from the Bar Kokhba era, I think in Nahal Hever and Masada, but for the most part, most of the material, most of the Tanakh material is from Qumran. Okay. So, what about in between? There are a few issues to clean up in between, which actually do go back a little further. Now, one source that I should have read first, but we're going to read now, is a passage in the Sifrei. It's page 18 in the reader. So I want you to open up to that. That's the Sifrei Bamidbar. I'm on the Sifrei Dvarim, one of the last passages in the Sifrei Dvarim. Page 13. Ellie, you read? Hey, Ellie?
Yeah, where's page 13?
13, yeah. Where it's bracketed.
Yeah.
No, no, Echad Shel. Hehe. This is Bali Kriya's nightmare.
Okay.
Is that Susan? You all recognize that word, right? Yeah, no one really knows what the origin of that word is. But this is the name of three spark. One was called Sefer Ma'onah, one was called Sefer Ma'on, probably it should be, really. One's called Sefer Hihi, and one's called Sefer Zatuchin. Okay. Why did they get these names? This passage, by the way, appears basically identical form, maybe Yushalmi and Tanit, I think. It appears in the Sefer Sofer, and it appears in one other place. He probably should tell you. Why am I guessing? This fourth place. He has Sofer and Yushalmi, but definitely, I don't know where the other one is. Unless it's okay. By the way, just for your information, in case you want to look it up in Yushalmi, notice Yushalmi Tainus Paradal on the base of the notes, right here. It also gives you another system on the side that says Samachet Amad Al. Most of the printed Yushalmi is Haperek Halacha, that's a very late form. They don't have strict daf structure, but there was a daf structure based upon the first printing of Yushalmi in Venice. That if you go to the library, you look up to get see what the first book of the Yushalmi in Venice looked like. There were no commentaries on the side, since we don't have any commentaries from that time. All our commentaries are later. It was just text, and it was printed basically on two columns per page. You have Amud Beis, Amud Gimel, and Amud Dalet. And it starts from the beginning of the Seder, it goes all the way to the end of one Seder, and starts anew in the next Seder, the number. Anyway, so this passage, which appears elsewhere, is the three spark. And why did they get these names? So the story continues. What do you mean? You mean our Sefer Torah only say nine times he? Yeah, I know.
Reference to a certain note that says that our Sefer Torah is in the old test.
What is different? Two, one of them had nine, two of them had 11, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody here have a Bar Mitzvah Parashat Tazrim and Torah? Lucky you all. Okay. I've had the chutzpah of teaching this one also. And you got to feel bad for the kids. Because the overwhelming majority of spellings in the Torah of he are just like that of who. And if you had the kudos, I've heard of people talk about getting like these clear things where you can lay it over the Sefer Torah so you can see the Torah. I think that it's probably halachically mutter, but it rubs me so much the wrong way. Just a concession to extreme forms of human laziness. But for Tashmir Mitzvah, I'd be a little more sympathetic, because you look at the Siddhas and the Kudas, and you have no idea what you're looking for a he. The spelling of he is predominantly found only in the Torah. I don't know how much it all found, the rest not. Anyway, nine times or 11 times in the Torah, he is written in a way that lets you breathe easier. Unfortunately, 9 or 11 is a very small number compared to probably the hundreds of occurrences of the word in the Torah. And therefore, you have to be well prepared. Yes. What happens?
The number of
Hebrew. No, it's all over the place. Almost everything but. So it's not just in your verse, but it isn't the parsha in the Torah that doesn't have the word he spelled above. Yes, from.
This is a side question, but we have how
how to what?
How is Peter able to read both of them?
That's a dialectical pronunciation. That's the way they pronounce it. Just as most Ashkenazim don't distinguish between Hamas Badal and Hamas Badal. Right? If you're here, you say change the meaning. That's the way they pronounce it. In the same way that Yemenites probably pronounce both Pata and Sebel, Pata. And that, if that's the dialect, that's just the way it is. Just as you pronounce Pesachot the same way. Right. And you pronounce I and Al the same way. I've already had comments about it, but if that's what the dialect is, that's what the dialect is. You can't tell your hair about that. Arch?
I don't understand why we are assuming that these Torahs are supposed to be higher than Torah.
Yeah, these aren't higher than Torah.
Why are we doing here?
Why would you not?
Well, it could be in different stories. And I have plenty of different stories.
Okay, a word of comment to background to this, okay? There is a reference somewhere in the Dal. It might be, I think it might be in Tosefta Shabbos, but I'm not sure, about Sefer Ha'adara. Put simply, there's something called official text. In fact, I wasn't going to mention this now, you made an issue. One of the comments that Shaul Lieberman had about his theory about the various Qumran texts that differ, some of them radically, from our Sifrei Masora and what Hazal had, is that they were what he called vulgar texts. Vulgar means popular. There were official texts kept in the Azara, which this would also seem to point, Shlosh Esparim Mintzub Azara. The Gemara elsewhere had the term, and they said that Sefer Azara. Maybe the Mishnah also somewhere. And so these were official texts. It stems from the Sifrei, but there were three of them, and each one had a minority meaning. Okay? Now, which presents, of course, the ironic conclusion, which is that which one of these could you have used to read for in the Sefer? The answer is none of them. They were all puzzled. Right? Because one of them had Zakut Hidden Dog. That's the one by the chance. Oh, we didn't finish reading. But one of them had a 9 keys. It should have had 11. So then two of them were wrong. And one of them had Ma'on, and it should have had Ma'on Da. And the third one, what's the third one? Finish reading. I'm sorry, by Shlach is Dr. Pei,
and
those are Tupsokim.
Yeah.
Okay, but our Spartan, Vishnayim did. Okay. Now, this last one is bizarre. Anyone recognize the word Dr. Pei?
No.
Maybe.
It's
not clear what it's. No one really knows what this word means. There is a word for a small person, Zuka, in Aramaic. Another mistake, by the way, Ma'ona and Ma'on doesn't have to actually be a mistake. It could be a Malay Hasar. Because remember the A at the end of Ma'ona is just a vowel marker. Right? If you ever have. Hey, come up. Do you have ever have come up in the last letter without a hey afterwards? And yet you pronounce it as if there's a hey mark in the vowel?
In the verb form.
All the time. The amarta. Right? So it's not like you can't have the ona without hey. It's not typically spelled that way. I understand that. A better example. Let's read Farsha. 20 times. 21 times. Na'ara. Right? It's possible, by the way, that's actually an archaic spelling. I'll have a drush on it. On the one case, that's narrow with the head. The point is that we call it a Craig Sib because we used to sing the hay there, but it may not really be a Craig Sib in the sense that maybe that's how the word could also be written. It could be spelled that way without the hay again. Sometimes words are written chaser. We're used to thinking of chaser as pre written in Shuro, but it can be written, those are just vowel markers. Chaser can be any vowel marker. Okay. Now, that raises another implication, which I'm not interested in dwelling upon because I'm not really interested. The theology doesn't bother me. But what is the probability that any one of these Svarim, what is the probability that a Sefer that was written in accordance with the 60s of the mistake, what's the probability that that was the same text that left Moshe Rabbeinu's hand?
You can't make that argument.
What? Well, what is the probability that Ma'ona is correct?
It's
2%
times
2%. That's correct. No, what David said is correct. Assuming that all the Svarim are equal value. So, we're Halacha is Machria based upon Rove. But a Hakra of Rove, without going to Lungus, does not determine physical reality, it determines Halachic reality. If you have two pieces of, two tray salami, one kosher, two kosher salami, and one tray salami, that are get mixed together, so there are Rishonim who hold, we don't possibly fight this way, since it's Bittel Barov, and everybody holds the spot of the rope, that Rishonim will hold that one person can eat all three. Right? So, Hachra and Sach is different than determining physical reality. So the probability is that you said correctly. It's a two-thirds probability in the Ona is the correct reading, spelling, and two-thirds probability, you know, of each one, and that leaves you with a total probability of about 30%. Now, when you consider all the other examples that we have, with the Falcon one way and the Bali Masura had a different way, what is the probability of our Sefer Torah matching exactly that on Rosh Rabbeinu? Exactly. The answer is infinitesimally small. Does it matter? None of it. That's the nature of Masura and Halacha, that you determine based upon Rosh. But now we're involved by the transient family, so clearly the implication. That's not a problem. That's just the nature of textual transmission. Yes?
Yeah. You said that, isn't there a case where if I'm born in 100 a year by an Irish assembly that would go to school and grow back?
That's a very famous Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin. And I can't respond to that because I don't think that if you did the experiment that they, you know, let's put it this way. We don't even understand scientifically the issue of the Sulim. I don't think go ask Paul from Muslim or guiding colleges whether in fact they're called true, and I think the answer is they can tell you no. So when you can first explain to me what that means, then you can go back and, you know, surfeit with the economy. That's a very famous passage that's often cited. But I don't know what to do with the entire passage, so I can't answer it. All right. I believe it's in the first paragraph in Sanhedrin Yerushalmi. Okay. Now, a few other issues to sort of pick up. Any questions so far?
So,
all right. And then David.
Why? I don't understand why it doesn't matter.
So the answer is, it's not that, I'm not telling you that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote one Sefer Torah and our Sefer Torah has no resemblance to it. What I am telling you is as follows. What Chazal, what the Rishonim recognize in the various sources that we've seen already, is that textual transmission was given over to human beings, not to Malach HaSharet. Which means that it is almost inevitable that along the way, minor changes are going to take place. You know, we could play the game of telephone in the room. I'm sure some of you all played that at some point in your life. Now, the truth is, this is not a question of one, you know, Bama Sora whispered in his ear, in his heart, Torah, he whispered again. It's not the case that our Sefer Torah would not look any other measure of his Torah. That's the show. But the Bama Sora took enormous amounts of care. One presumes that the same care was taken in prior generations. Even when great care is taken, as we've seen, even with computers at work. I showed the example last week. Minor things are going to happen. The accumulation of minor things is probably still going to be minor. As I said last week, when you look today, and we've had a process of standardization which eliminates these issues because it doesn't really get you back to the original text, there still are a few differences, like Suadaka, this is Parsha again, Pei and Aleph, Sifrei, I don't remember which Sifrei Ashkenaz and Sifrei Sfarad, but any prior here, so you go into your shul and say the Torah, and take a look at what you have in Suadaka, it's a real Sfaradi shul, and Ashkenaz, you go into your shul, and you see what your Sifrei Torah has, and you'll see one's got Aleph and one has a head. There are two other examples of this, but we have no simonim, so we don't get the partial break in partial sum. But also Vayihi and Vayihiyu, I think I said last week, I come to expect that in the annual ritual when the Baal Kriya reads what's in front of the Sefer Torah and half the shul, six out there, either Vayihi or Vayihiyu, because their Sfarim have the Sfarim Acheirim. If you look in Koran and Embroider, they tell you Sfarim Acheirim has the Vayihi or Vayihiyu you may know of. That's the way it is. So it doesn't have a great impact. It's not because some of the it's true. For a lot of purposes, Torah Shabbat doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. It matters only in the sense that Minor Har Sinai is the source of authority for Halacha, and having minor shiurim in the text and transmission doesn't affect that. When's the last time you? I shouldn't say that. But when's the last time you read a shuva when the poster excited to cook it? I've read at least one. That would be Huda. But it was an unusual shuva, and that would be Huda would ask, leave it to a Jew. Not to know that you heard that. The first is to ask him the question. He was asked this question by the Kaiser's representative. He was asked, is it true that if you swear an apostle Sefer Torah, that the Shul is not binding? We haven't had a case in which a Jew had sworn an oath, and the Sefer Torah was later in his apostle, and the Jew man wanted to claim that he wasn't bound by the agreement because the Sefer Torah was apostle. So he goes to quote Pasuk after Pasuk after Pasuk of Shmuel, where there's no Sefer Torah there, or whatever. He has some sort of halachic discourse on how if one of the, even one Chumash in the Torah was shalim without a mistake, it still would have a din of a Sefer shalim and doesn't matter about other things, and it's only because we've covered our Hebrew that we don't use them to Chumash. So that's the Shuvah we quote Pasuk after Pasuk. Normally speaking, Shalos and Shuvah, you don't try, you know, Sukkim being used as proof. So it doesn't tell a lot of practical Persian stuff other than the fact that the authority of halacha is based upon my Arsina. Other than that, it doesn't play a major role. Yes.
So what we have today, you say it's based on another kid's argument, or is it based on the big thing?
What do you mean what we have today?
Well,
no, we have it, because it says Chazal fully indicated they were Makriya, that you write in the Sefer Torah, Me'una, and you write he 11 times, and you write Nare not too late.
So we took it.
Yeah, in other words, what the Gemara, what the Sefer is saying, is that when they came to fix the Sefer Torah and decide on the Nusach, the correct Nusach, they followed Rosh. And so, if they had been written out of Sefer, I assume they changed their form, I don't know. I assume they had written a Sefer Torah, it would have said Me'una, it would have said Nare Atulei, it would have said he 11 times, and none of the three original Svarim read like the Sefer Torah. Like, the proper Sefer Torah would have been different than any of those three Svarim.
Okay, then why would we have a different score of the Rashba? Why would that be? So he said that anything that had like a mistake was possible, that we're not going to. Like, how would that make any sense if he knows that we have it?
Right, the difference is that here, the difference is in the case of Chazal. Let me ask you a question this way. Can anyone think of a reason why the Rashba should be wrong on halakhic parts? Why we should not go back and change our Svarim to match those of have come out of Gemara?
Ami? Do you have different versions of the Svarim then?
Right. Based on what we've seen now, right? It could have been this non-Chazal. There was multiple versions. Take the example of Shabbos. Navi Rim, Navi Ram. So who's to say that there weren't Svarim floating around Chazal's time that was come out of Nachmani Amar Yonatan wasn't using that read Navi Rim, Mole, like we have? So that would be an argument as to why we shouldn't change our Svarim, because maybe our Supreme Masorah were based upon different Svarim that Chazal had. We don't have, it's not as if we have Chazal Sefer Torah in front of us. When you have multiple Sefer Torah in front of you, multiple traditions, and you have to decide between them, so then you follow the rule. But when you don't, when you sort of deal with apples and oranges, because you know what some of Chazal had, but you don't know, you don't have any sample of what the Torah looked like in Chazal's time. You have an individual drasha here that tells you something. So you really can't sort of compare that against the Sefer Masorah, because the Sefer Masorah might simply be coming from a different, you know, different point, a different state of Chazal.
Like, for example, Ron Chomsky's telling you specifically to read it that way or to say that way. So
he's saying that that's what
would have been folded around in that time. Mm-hmm. So like, if
you
look at
the
word in other terms, that time, maybe having a different text,
that
we don't possibly like,
be able
to
tell
from
it
specifically like this. So like, you
have to remind me in another
way, that's not.
Okay, right. So you could explain, I'm not saying you can't defend the Rashba. But if I wanted to defend the Rashba, I could say.
I'm
going to
get that
stuff. No, because the point is that Rashul Nani Amriyosa did not necessarily see every sacred Torah that was in existence. He lives in Eretz Yisrael. Does he know what the Sefer Torah and Gadol look like? I mean, presumably it looks a lot like the Sefer Torah and Eretz Yisrael. We don't know. And therefore, you want to understand the position that says, which by the way, is the contemporary position. It is, in effect, the minhag, even if we think maybe we shouldn't do that way. The argument that the current minhag, your minhag, my minhag, at least what I'm told you, but what our self ends up providing us with us, is that Chazal's test is not necessarily the only one, and therefore we're not going to, since we don't have a basis for comparison, and then we can decide in authority, we follow our Sefer Masorah.
Do we follow it even if it's not about like Chazal's and the Gemara and Chazal?
But again, Chazal, remember, it's not that Chazal says to us the text is X, and this is a Sahela. What if Yom HaRoyan used it as a proof, a particular Shita or Drasha in this case, that he was drawing it? So it's not like the Gemara puts this Gushpanka per se on this is the final decision. Well, Machriya is Gwe Mavi Rim and Mavi Rama, you write Mavi Rama. So again, you could argue either side. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Now, moving on a little bit, a few other issues that I think I want to explore, which again relate to the changing of the text at various points. Okay, now, by the way, what is the dating on the Sefrei? The Sefrei itself is from the Mishneh here, but when does the story date to? Yeah. What's your name again?
Josh, maybe. I guess that's based on the
year 70. It has to be, it can't be later than the year 70.
It's
you know, So, and I don't know that this, you know, we're going to see one Rishon on the Radak, who I suspect understands this to be much earlier than the year 70, more like the year 510. We'll see why, you can see why in a little bit why that you might think that way. So this, in fact, it suggests, goes back to a period before Qumran, certainly before Hadal, maybe even earlier than our text from Qumran, where Hadal already had a sense that there were differences among the Sepharim, and there was a need to standardize the Sifrei Torah so they had one text. Okay, and the standard of standardization they used was Hachra Alfi Rov. Now, a few other issues in terms of the change of the text. Okay, really, I want to talk about three things. Number one, it's a phenomenon known as Kina Akasov and sequence filter. They may or may not be the same thing. The second is the issue of the scripture right to Sefer Torah. And the third is the issue of a crave sieve. Now, start with Kina Akasov and sequence filter. Pull out the Sefer, the other Sefer. And this is on page number 18. I don't want to complain too much about that, but theoretically, everybody who cared last week should have prepared this already. Some of you I can tell did, some of you give the impression that you didn't, but it will make... I don't want to embarrass people. It's not my agenda, and I try to avoid doing it. But on the other hand, I don't think I'm just calling the same three people who are the ones who are prepared. You know, you can go through class, and if you're smart, you know, if you have a good memory, you can usually ace exams because you get a good set of notes, and that's great, and you go to college that way. But if you really want to actually learn something and come prepared to engage with something, it really helps if you prepared the material before and you're in a position to ask questions moving beyond just us reading the text. It really goes a lot farther. Can I have a volunteer to read the Sefer?
Yes.
You know, actually start, I don't know why that was bracketed there. Since I wasn't the one who prepared the reader from years ago, I'll bow myself at this point, but the second one, the same one there, the theme that came before is that the enemies of the Jewish people are enemies of Hashem. That's the theme that comes before. Now, to quote another pasuk like this, the Fein
Omer.
So what does that pasuk translate and literally mean?
That somebody who touched, I think Zachariah was talking to an Israel, and he said that anybody that touches you, it's as if he's like putting his finger in his own eye.
Okay, so that's what describes. Kian Ogev, Bochen, Kian Ogev, Vahino. Now, so how is that the same thing as saying that enemies of the Jewish people are enemies of God? So, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Okay, so how does Rabbi Yehuda read the pasuk? The truth is, cultural reference. Pull down bubbles. You know what that is? Glad to know. Okay. Gappy dog. Eno. Who is Eno? He is I. Who's he? Well, that's our user read. How did you read it?
It means that point, if I try to touch you, now we're speaking, one touches you is like one touches the dumb eye.
But Rabbi Yehuda said Eno is not a reference to the person doing it, but it's how you say me. Okay? Now, he calls this Kina HaKasa. What does Kina HaKasa mean?
What is a Kino?
It calls somebody Kino. Nickname. Kino is, did you say name?
What did you say?
Kino here is not a nickname.
Euphemism.
A euphemism. Kino is a euphemism. So the Ani Kinir Kho, well, they're going to quote, Ani Kinir Kho Dobo Lo Yo Yo.
Yuri Yo says, my nation has exchanged its honor for how the dark, something that doesn't work. That's its honor. So deep, but you don't want to say such things.
Papi Mala. So therefore, we use the euphemism. Now, what does it mean, Kino Hakasa, literally? Scripture uses the euphemism. So, who in Zechariah
who wrote it at Eino? Zacharia or Anantikis that Gogol edited? Forget theology for the moment. Theologically, it won't be a problem anyway if you talk about Zacharia. But what does the term sound like? Eino HaKasov? Was it Zacharia or was it later? No. Eino HaKasov. What term would suggest that it's later? The other one I mentioned before, which is? Tikkun Sofer. Kino HaKasov sounds like the Pasuk, meaning the author. Whether it's Moshe Rabbeinu slash Bone from the Torah, or wherever wrote Sefer Chaya, I mean, it's probably the Ayin of the Gemara, the Pasuk, and the Golah. So, that's what I would say Kino HaKasov means. That, just the simple meaning of the term. I'm not telling you, Mayor, that there aren't Rishon who understand otherwise. Rashi definitely does understand otherwise. But the simple reading of the word, Kino HaKasov, doesn't mean that the text was changed later. It just means that's how the Pasuk was written originally. Okay? I know it doesn't say Kino HaKosev, but it's effectively the same thing, Kino HaKasov. A scripture utilized, if there is such a word in English. Okay. Continue. But the Eel says that in fact Hashem, I am for myself a virgin, and it should have said, Allah on the Masa. But you don't want to speak of something being a burden upon God. Ella. Okay. This is a passage in the chapter where he goes into the Mishnah and the Mikdash, and the elders are turned with their backs to the Eichel. The Hema Mishnah and the Sam Kedem Al Hashemesh, same verb. They're bowing to the sun eastward. And the term is used, Shal Tepet Hatzim Mora El Apam. And it doesn't mean El Apam, it means El Api, El Shekinah Tafel. Okay? Go ahead.
Oh, hello. I thought
what should it have said?
It should have said, what you should have
the low tumult. The God, you will never die, which is true, but it's not something you can speak in those terms. Ella Shekinah Kaku. Kayotiba. Right, there are a number of chapters in Talmud, just for your knowledge, that are basically reviews of Jewish history. It probably won't help you very much in the courses here, because they aim at something else, and this is biblical history anyway, but you have a number of times in Tanakh where you have a retelling of the highlights of Jewish history of different periods. Several of them are Sefer Tehillim, you have one at the end, a little bit at the end of Sefer Yoshua, we read part of, we read the beginning part of the Haggadah, the Abraham Nahar, Yoshua, Sefer Ne'elam, you have in the Nehemiah, which we read part of Vayivar, the Vayivar stuff, not Vayivar stuff, the other part, the Harosim HaBrit, is from that retelling of Jewish history. So here's the review. What's that? No, Barim is just a review from year 1 to year 40. It doesn't go back to the, there's not much of a period of history to cover. And this is Mizmar and Kelim have a review, and it mentions the Egel, and it says that they swapped their honor for the image of an ox that eats grass, the Eyal. It should have said, Vayamiru et Kivodi. Instead it says, Vodam, El Shekina Tosu. It should have said, good. Shekina Tosu. You know, you can actually stop there. The next one is the hardest one, and you want to ask me what exactly was the Kino HaKasov there. But what is the common denominator of pretty much all of these examples? They're all Kedya.
Then the person that originally wrote it was someone who had changed the text.
That's our supposition, but fine. That's what the term Kino HaKasov means as a definition. And what do these things have in general common? All references, that's why I stopped here, that refer to God in a way that might have been disrespectful and therefore changed. And how much do they change?
One letter.
very interesting. It's not in the reader, but I suspect, and I probably didn't send it out, because I think I put, did I put it on the source sheet? No, it's in the later section. There's a comment in Rashi for Parshas Vayera. On the pasuk, there is another term that's used. It's called tikkun zofrim. Tikkun zofrim sounds as if it's changed from later squats. That's what it means. Zofrim tikkun. Tina pasuk sounds like it's original. So there is a pasuk in Parshas Bereishis, and I think this comes from Medrash Rava, or maybe Tanhuma, in which it says, Abraham Avinu made a snare Hashem. And the truth is, that's not really true. Hashem was still standing before Avram. Avram didn't go to meet Hashem. Hashem had come to visit Avram. Yet the pasuk says, "Avram Avinu mitzvah Hashem." So Rashi says, in your formation, in parentheses, but it's there in the manuscript. Hashem hafachuhu radal lichtokin. Now, that's what some, now the question is, did Rashi say it or not say it, this last line. As a general rule, when something is less understandable or more controversial, what happens to it? What does scribes do to it? They usually edit it out. It's rare that things get introduced by scribes that run contrary to normal sets of principles. What's that? Asher hafachuhu. She turned it around. Radal. Lichtol came. Now, the truth is, whether or not Rashi actually wrote these words, and you have to assume that he did for the moment, Rashi Neal makes clear what he held in sequence of. And if you read Rashi there, I'm not going to read now, but at the beginning of Paraswami Vedas, Pasuk Gimel, Rashi very clearly assumes that Tikkun Zofrim implies a later change. And there, he mixes in Tina Pasuv as well, which means to some reason he seems to understand Tina Pasuv is a later change also. There is a long footnote, I don't remember exactly where it is, by Professor Dimitrovsky. It's in the, they put out the two volumes of the Tuvas Rashba, just the Rashba and Tanakh, meaning two of his that dealt with Tanakh issues. And if somebody's really interested in reading, you know, the whole page and then some, I think, where he collects all the material on Rashi, and Rashi's view on Tikkun Zofrim was that it implied a later change. I'm not convinced that what Rashi said, I'm not convinced that the Sifrei meant that as Tina Pasuk. And now certainly a lot of Achronim wanted to deny such a possibility, but it would appear from Rashi that he held such a position. Now the truth is, when it comes to Sefer Eos, and most and many of the examples found in the Sifrei, it's not so problematic. The notion that Hazal, that Ashek Tafangola, might have exercised editorial editorial authority over books of Nah, just not problematic. You don't have to look very far here and there to find such opinions among Rishonim. Hazal himself implied that they attribute a number of Sarim not to the authors, but to sort of Ashek Tafangola, or this Yavashiyaso, which would imply, minimally, so you know, Hazal say that Chizki of the CSL wrote Shira Shirin, Mishlei, Kohelet, and Yishayahu. Right? I don't think Hazal meant that he wrote those parts. I think Hazal assumed that Shlomo Malach wrote Mishlei, Shira Shirin, Kohelet, and Yishayahu basically wrote a statement. But the fact that they used such a term would imply, and the basis, the reason why Hazal say that, would imply at least something more, like, more than I assume just copying the statement over. I assume some type of editorial activity on the part of the Anshek Nesha, no law of Hizkiya of the CSL. The only area in which Rashi is a little bit disturbing or sort of disconcerting, because we're not used to thinking this way, but the truth is, if Rashi in fact said this, then you have to sort of realize, well, if Rashi said it, it may not be a view of what he's adopted, it means that the opinion is not completely off the map. But it's disconcerting because we're not used to thinking that Hazal would have exercised such a discretion, or they would have exercised discretion when it came to changing things in the Torah. One comment which is interesting, I'll get your comment and question. I think this is a bit of a push, but it's still it's a little bit of inspired brilliance. Professor Lieberman suggested that this could, in fact, this is what Enoch Huffman did. Notice it always involves changing, not Rashi's case, but the Sifrei. Assuming the Sifrei, Enoch Huffman meant changing the text,
it always involves one letter. So there's a comment that Gemara has in Givamos. I think it's in Ayin Zayin. That's the story of David and the Givonim. When, in order to achieve forgiveness, it's the end of Shmuel Beit, I think Parah Chaval. There was a famine for 3 years, and there was no rain, and there was once a wine brought. Told them that Shaul Beit on Amin Ash he did the Givonim. And in order to achieve forgiveness for the land that doesn't have rain, he had to appease the Givonim, who it seems that Shaul killed 7 of them, family members. So today, there's a man with 7 members of Shaul's house to kill. Now, for David to hand them over was a violation of Torah law. But David HaMelech says in the Agadah, in the Gemara, so the Rebbe asked the question, what do you mean Os Achas? It's the entire pasuk. He says, Los Achas. Lieberman suggested that the origin of the phrase, because the Gemara means obviously a pasuk, Los Achas. He suggested, and I think this is a little bit Jewish, but it's very clever, that it could be this could be a reference, this could originate the term as a justification why Chazal changed from one letter in certain cases to Kvod Shemayim. Namely, Muta Shutei Acher, Oz Achas, and Akhara, the Ayyub Chalo Shem Shemayim Bar Hesia. I don't really know that this is a Gemara meant, but I have to admit it's clever. It's very, I mean, he had an enormous bikini. Anyway, bottom line, Rashi here, that seems to be Rashi's view on Ibn Sofrim. I would argue generally that the simple reading, Kina Kosta, means not the way Rashi understood it, it means the original author. Tikkun Sofrim, which is not found in the phrase, found later in Russian, one on a simpler basis argue means actually a change, a later change in the text. Theoretically, you could read either one, either direction. You could, if you really wanted to, you could stretch Tikkun Sofrim is a belief that it really means the original author, and Rashi obviously read Kina Kosta, as a later change, which that I don't find so compelling, but that appears what Rashi held out.
According to that view of Rashi, that it's a later change,
It is a little, I mean, it is
but it has to do with sort of, we're going to talk about, I don't know where I put it on the syllabus later, because it's probably more class. We're going to talk about the Raman's AP card. So, we're going to talk about the Rambam's AP Kara and what the AP Kara actually says and what Chazal actually says. There's no question that the Rashi is somewhat disconcerting reading it. The question is, you're left with one of three options. One I'm going to tell you is tongue in cheek, okay? And you'll figure out which one. One is to say that Rashi never said it, okay? I mean, that's one possibility. The second possibility is to say that Rashi is not Bikoro, okay? The third possibility is to say that you have to reorient, and that was obviously tongue-in-cheek. The third possibility is to say you have to reorient your view of what the Mishnah and what Chazal has, see that maybe there were opinions. It's not a question of accepting or rejecting. It's obviously a little bit on the margins as to what they held or what exactly their view of Tarmah Shemayim was. So we're going to explore that a little further when we look at the Rambam's AP Kara, because there are some perhaps more disturbing comments by Ibn Ezra. Again, there are a handful of limited comments, and even if it's not the only one, but probably the most prominent, that raise that very same question. But I think when you look at Rashi, the first option of saying Rashi didn't write it, once one is going back to the Kisfayat, and it's there, the fact that it doesn't appear in many printings is because people were uncomfortable with it, not because Rashi didn't necessarily write it. And so then I think it really pushes you to option three, that you sort of have to reconsider what exactly is the definition of Tarmah Shemayim. Or at least have certain Rishonim views. That might be a better way of saying it. It's not a halachic nafkamina. It doesn't change anything. Whether Rashi meant what he said and whether he's right or not, it doesn't really matter, but obviously it's important anyway. But we'll explore that a little further in a couple of weeks. Question? Yeah.
Besides what you just said regarding changing your definition of what Torah Mishmai means, is there, like, it seems that they really stuck to changing things which may not have been no different. One letter and they changed it.
Okay. Except for this one, these aren't real substantive changes. There's no question about that. They're very important. Even Rashi, when he pointed out that as opposed to changing one letter, here you're flipping an entire phrase. So, and it's also in the Torah, that makes it a little bit more jarring. So they're not real significant in scope, but nonetheless, we're used to thinking along a certain line that it's one thing to say by accident something changes because we'll omit the Torah and Alfa Yeshua. It's another thing to say that Chazal would have deliberately introduced the change in the text.
So, that's true, but the
reason we're talking about the state of the text as transmitted, as far as we can tell, from Chazal down to our time. And what we can tell during Chazal's time and a little before Chazal's time. But no, it doesn't have, other than what the text might once have looked like, it has no ramifications beyond it. Yeah.
Is it that what we said before, that's sober, and how they would do things? One thing just means that now, when Chazal said we should change the style to pay or whatever, that they would go along with that. It seems.
Well, Leuven's argument is something that was limited to the medieval period by its definition. The guilds were a secular medieval phenomenon, so it had no relevance to the period of Chazal. From what we can tell, what I can just tell a regular on the relationship of Sofer and Rabbanim is that there was no power between them, no gap between them as one might have today. I'm not saying Sofer and today don't have their Rabbanim and their Poskim, it just sort of follows a different sort of set of rules. Mine is suggesting in the medieval period there was a greater degree of insulation, but in Chazal, at least when you look at the various Gemara, where you see sophers being done, Rabbi Meir was a sofer, he studied under Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, famous Gemara Eretz, it seems like it was not a separate chevra of sofer versus sofer. There is sofer, right? Okay. Two last items. Number one, and you'll read them, I'm not going to read them now. The script of our Torah. Let me step back for one second. What is the oldest text or text of Tanakh that we possess? There's something older. I mean, not a... What's that? No, 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 we don't have that. That passage is creates problems, not presented text. I'm a state recorder on top, raises its own set of problems. The Catechenome scrolls. They were silver amulets that date, I think, from the 7th century, and they have what appears to be a truncated version of Greek Castellano, maybe not truncated. They might actually have been able to read more recently. What's that? Catechenome is by Dekinome, the valley near Yerushalayim. Catech is probably a ridge. And they found. But basically, you have, that might be one of the only things where you find a text, you know, of Torah from the early period. That doesn't really help you very much in terms of seeing a text. Now, what was the script? What did the Catechenome scroll look like? And what did many inscriptions of the Rishon period that have been found? What are they written in? So they're written in the script that's known as Sabagrin. In English, we call it the Paleo-Hebrew script, which in itself implies a certain bias, but one which certainly adheres to one opinion in Chazal. The Gemara Sanhedrin, clearly Chazal moved it through other scripts, there's another script. The Paleo-Hebrew script, if you look in the reader, sorry? No, that's the Gemara Sanhedrin. That you'll read. That also will be prepared. And where's the alphabet? Alphabet.
24.
Page 24 it is. Okay. So on page 24, you will see, at your leisure, you can memorize all these signs, because I will ask you everyone on the midterm and final. I will ask you none of the midterm and final, I'm just joking. These are various scripts based upon inscriptions they found. Not all inscriptions had every letter, so therefore they couldn't identify what the letter would look like. It's known as Paleo-Hebrew. Now, Chazal has three opinions as to what the role this was in history. Again, I said last week there are certain things that you will learn that will disturb you, that if you read the Gemara and learn those things, they will disturb you too, because they come out of the Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the second parak, speaks about on the pasuk of Chasavos Mishneh Harazot, it says that basically Ezra changed the script when they came back from Babel. They used to write, it sounds like there were two options for the Torah, Hebrew and Aramaic, and two scripts. Sabagri and Sabashuri, which is what our script is called, the Assyrian script. And the it said that Biru Lahan Lashon Ivri Sabashuri. And they left Sabagri for the Hedyotos, who were probably the Samaritans, who still, I believe, write their scriptures in Paleo-Hebrew script. At Qumran, interestingly enough, the number of the scrolls were written, most were written in Ashuri, but there's certain scrolls in which the Shem Hashem was written in Sabagri. I don't know exactly what that means, because you can read it more than one way. It could be they regarded either they wrote it that way because they considered it more sanctified and more ancient, that's why they were God's name, or because they considered it less sanctified and therefore didn't really want to write the Shem Hashem, so they wrote it in this other script. The Chazal has one opinion that the Torah was given in Sav Ivri, and it was changed later by Ezra to Sav Ashuri. There's a second opinion that it was originally given in Sav Ivri, the first, maybe first Lukos, and then it was changed to Sav Ashuri, it was changed to Sav Ivri, because they sinned, and Ezra changed it back. And then, and they based this upon the idea that they took Sava Ashid Lishana. The Chasav Lo, yes, last week, everything's, I don't know, this week's partial, last week's partial. The Chasav Lo is Mishmei HaTorato, Sava Ashid Lishana. And the third opinion, Rebbe's opinion, is that never changed. Okay. Now, the archaeological evidence would suggest that the opinion that the Torah was, that the Paleo-Hebrew script was used, whether or not it's Torah given in Ashuri changed and then changed back, or whether it's given in Ivri and changed by Ezra, one way or the other, it's not overwhelming evidence, and you could explain otherwise, you could say that Sav Ivri is probably easier to inscribe on stone, and that's why the only inscriptions we have left from the Bayi Sheni are written on stone, because if they were written on parchment or papyrus, what would have happened? This is the grave. The only reason why Qumran survived is because it was in a dry desert climate. Have not been to that. scholarship would be in a very different place. Anyway. Interestingly enough, Yerushalmi says, I don't think it's from the Bible. You know the famous Agada, the man in Sanof Shabalukos, the name for you owned it? Right? But what happens if you go to South Ivory? So the Yerushalmi says, because Yerushalmi has said that if you hold the Torah was given in Roi, that's the term they use, then within the letter that stood the name, not the man in Sanof. Yerushalmi says that. Where is it? Probably page 20 and 21.
But it doesn't change the fact that we learn a lot out of it. We learn a lot from, we learn a lot straight out of Shabbos. And when you write, we were learning about shame, the true shame, Shmuel.
That has nothing to do with the Sabbath, that has to do with the...
No, it does. It brings down that, what are you talking about? If you write shame, Shmuel, you have a man that's not a man.
So that's a fit, right?
So then he goes back, well, you can only be modern. Yeah, in other words, it's just a mess of peace. It's better because now it's on the tablet, so that makes it better. But it has absolutely no source.
So obviously means you'll just fill in different. Like, I mean, let's give you an example. The halacha by the way would be the same. If you decided now to write stop in Kesav Imri, then whatever the letters were like there would be the same issue. Okay, the last thing I want to close on. I might have to spend just a couple of minutes next time because I don't want to go much over. It's Krayuk Siv. What is the role of Krayuk Siv? So you're going to read, you should have read, Barbanel and Radak. The Radak, I want to read the Radak. The Barbanel I'm not going to read. We'll describe the Barbanel next week. But the Radak, I want you to tell me as we read what the source for the Radak is. The Radak is an introduction. So the Zim Rishonim. Page 14. The Radak is laying out what he's going to do in his Perush. Small in his. I mean, there are three kinds of things. There is Kray Siv, which really should be said Siv Kray. It's written one way, but we read it differently. And then there are Sukkim, there are words, not Sukkim. Words that are Kray Velo Siv, that are read but are not written, like in Sefer Rosh, you have one or two. And then there are Siv Velo Kray. There are words that are written in the text and we don't read. So he says he's going to try to explain when he writes his paper, he's going to try to explain both versions. That's why. He goes on to say, what does Tom mean, by the way? Don't tell me reason. When Ibn Ezra or Adab used to say the Tama, what does that mean? It doesn't mean reason. It means the explanation of the Perush. That's the way they use the word. So he will try to write, give a Perush for both versions. Call that Fahad. Where does Krayuk Siv come from? So the Radak says, Okay, now he says, Ramakom, I'll explain in a second. So Ramakom
Shiloh, the Zebra Dikom, Ahadir, Ramakom, whatever, a little mixed, no mixed you, or couple of
dictionaries? Well, this is an anachronism, but what he says is they wrote one, and they didn't put some dots on it. If you look at Krayuk Siv in some Sifri Masorah and some Krayuk Promotion, where you leave the word at the kudos and you put the word on the side. Okay? Okay, now, the truth is, assuming the Radak is correct, he's wrong on certain facts, which is namely, we know that they didn't have the kudos before the Masoretic period, so you have to take it with Baal Pem, and Krayuk Siv, they obviously had a Baal Pem, that's the answer. So putting that specific issue aside, what does he say? He says when they had the Golos, and I assume the Golos we've shown us, of the Laskarim and the Talbalu, and the Chachamim, what did they do? They found Machlokas the Svarim, and they went Achar HaRov L'Fidatam. What does it mean Achar HaRov L'Fidatam? Yes, I have a question for you. 7 and 3, which is more? Okay. 14 and 1, which is more? Okay, that was tough, right? So let me ask you a question. What do you mean Achar HaRov L'Fidatam?
And if they had, let's say there was a little population of 100 super torn, they had 30 of them, and now they're making changes based on 30 versus 28 versus 2.
Find out, but why did, what's the feedback from you?
They were saying before, what they had was not always new knowledge.
All that is, but what else could they have done? I'll just, in the interest of time, not all sperm are created equal. Here's a rule. If you have sacred tower A, sacred tower B, and you know that B was copied directly from A, for the purposes of determining intent, you can take B and throw it out the window. You know it was copied from A, so it was copied only from A. Not from melding two sperm together. Why? Because anything that doesn't match A is post-so, fair? And otherwise, imagine they can do the copy from it. So the feedback, and some sofa are better and some sofa are worse. So if you have a lousy sofa, right, a lousy paper Torah, so when you're trying to figure out a rope, you may not stand that. Now, what is the basis for where did Radak get this idea from? He said that they followed a rope, the feedback, huh? And if they couldn't determine, they couldn't even clean up, then they used this mechanism of stiffable crates to preserve both readings. Where did he get this idea from about the general idea? What's the source?
We
should all know. It's a phrase. He doesn't quote it, but I assume that the phrase is the background of what the Radak is thinking. So, it's a phrase part of the name Subhadar. Now, as I noted earlier, when does the Radak, if in fact he based himself on the phrase, what, when he says, Gil of Sifre Torn in Subhadar, when? In the year 70? No, the beginning of the Vayashani period, right, when they came back from the Gulf. That's how he sees Gil of Sifre Torn in Subhadar. And when he sees for the function of praise sin, which we have in our Svarim, written in our Svarim, they wouldn't have been written in the Svarim, then they would have been about that. And the way of preserving two versions of the text when the Chazal put in the Machlia, which was the rogue. In other words, when it was Shabbat to Shabbat, or they just felt they couldn't really determine, then they preserved both readings through the mechanism of praise sin, or one of the other mechanisms. What he doesn't explain, and doesn't anywhere in the environment, now we'll take him to task for it, why sometimes pray about civ, one time civ and pray. When you have a civ cray, one in the margin, one inside, why one inside, why one outside, how do you know which is which, and so on. But that's what the Radak says. And the Radak understands that the last of these three things, the phenomenon of civ and cray, also belongs to the topic of textual transmission. And it's a way of preserving things when you have multiple texts. Der Hagav, it has been suggested that some of the Altikrei in the Gemara or elsewhere are in fact other ways of preserving alternate text. The one classic example, the Rav Shalom Bonoyev, Altikrei Bonoyev El Bonoyev. If you look in the Isaiah scroll in the Israel Museum, you will see that there's a Vav Tluya above the line in the word Bonoyev, and just to read Bonoyev, which makes one wonder the fact that there were multiple Svarim, our whoever was not there has Bonoyev, but the Altikrei revealed the knowledge that there were other Svarim. And parenthetically, what did these Bonoyev? I said this last week. They're not new builders. Here's the other new builders. It's probably related to the word Bina, Mibinaya. You're the one to understand. That's why Talmidei Chachamim. Talmidei Chachamim married to what?
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.